Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Tottenham story is this. It's time to change the situation if Tottenham want to change.
I love to win, mate. That's the main thing. Hopefully I can fulfill those dreams and aspirations of every Tottenham supporter.
And still Ricky Villa. What a fantastic run. He scored.
That's going to have a crack. He is, you know.
I'm loving big engines instead. Guess I'm a Spurs fan now then.
Well, hello everybody. By popular demand, we are back with a very special Tottenham Way draft podcast following the stunning success of Tom Barkley's pilot episode a few months ago. We are going to attempt to do it all over again, this time focusing on the years between 2009 and 2014. And Tom, who's a little bit of a geek, has spent hours going through the incredible number of players who were part of the Tottenham squad. Some of them did not play. Some of them I have never heard of. But he has done research into everybody. He can tell us their appearances, their goals, what films they went to see, their favourite food, etc., etc. So I hope you're going to enjoy this. Tom Barkley of The Sun, Tom Allnut of The Times, Dan Kilpatrick of The Standard, and me, Marcus Buckland. Tom, this is interesting. I mean, some of the names, I think you've made them up, to be honest.
Yeah, I can believe that. And as someone who wasn't as passionate passionately following Tottenham as you guys presumably all were during this period, yeah, I was completely at a loss with some of these players. And when I checked out how many games they played, it gave me the answer why. Quite a few of these players on this list didn't actually make an appearance during this period, but I don't know what the criteria is, but they seem to pop up on Soccer Base and on Wikipedia, so that's how they've been included. The period we've gone for, 2009 to 2014, yeah, so that's the season of 2009 to 2010, 10-11, 12-13, 13-14, 11-12 in there as well. Just followed on from the last one we did. We seem to get quite a lot of feedback, people enjoying this, the nostalgia of it all. So, yeah, let's see how it goes.
Yeah, and of course, just to remind you of what we're going to do, three of us, under the guidance of Tom B, will attempt to name the best possible 11. We take it in terms. I'm going to try and avoid, amongst others, and apologies for the pronunciations, Stipe Pletikosa, Dominic Ball. Going further down the list, there were a couple of other names that Last Dombax. I don't think he's going to feature in my starting 11. Paul Jose or Jose Mpoku will struggle to get in, but I could be forgetting some incredible cameo he produced during this period. Cameron Lancaster and Christian Ceballos are struggling to get into my front line. You've already told us, Tom, that 4-4-2 is the formation we've got to go with. The other issue, and we had a problem with this last time, do we pick, you know, Harry Kane is an option, but between 2009 and 2014, arguably he wasn't at the peak of his powers. So is there an asterisk against Kane because of that?
Yes. So because I'm such a geek, I've looked through all these players and how many games they played during this period and goals they scored, both for league and overall, which took a long time. Not sure I'll ever do that again. But yeah, the way I think we should do it, the only way that makes it make any sense is to pick how they played during this period. So, for example, Harry Kane, obviously probably Tottenham's greatest ever player, but during this period, he only made 11 league appearances, scoring 3 goals in the league. So and I think it was 26 overall and 5 goals. So, yeah, he's not. I think he could be sort of a second striker once all the other ones are gone, but it's not prime Harry Kane. Whereas, if anyone can guess who actually made out of all these players on this list, and it's a long, long list because there's a lot of players during this period, which player do you think played the most out of anyone during this period? Any quick guesses? I'm not going to leave you hanging too long. I'll give you a clue. It's a midfielder.
Tom Huddleston.
Not even close. Anyone else care to venture a guess?
Scott Parker.
He was only there for two seasons during this period. The answer is Aaron Lennon. Despite Aaron Lennon, in my head, having a few injury problems, but they must have come later in his career. He basically played pretty much every game during this period. In his five-year period, he made 181 appearances in all competitions, which is by far and away the most.
Okay, well, as I'm going first, I'm picking Aaron Lennon. There's no need for me to explain anymore. I'm off to a flyer, boys.
Error.
Tell me I'm next, Tom.
No,
tell
come
me
on. I mean, Aaron Lennon. I'll just quickly, I know there's a huge list, just so everyone knows who I could have gone for. Oh, no. I've just realised that I've made a terrible error. I just made a terrible error. Can I start again?
I mean, I think we should carry on, and I'm not going to edit this one out either, Marcus. You've had an absolute mess. But Aaron Lennon was very good during this period. As I said, played all those games, scored 15 goals during that period as well. Obviously, a lot of assists as well. So he's a good pick, but there are other players out there. I know Dan is chomping at the bit to go next, but it is actually Tom Allnutt coming in now.
Oh, dear.
Bad luck, Marcus. I'm just wondering if you did your preparation for this or whether you just came on the pod willy-nilly and then, you know.
It's like I gave it to you 5 minutes before, this list.
I've been too busy thinking about Massimo Luongo getting into my team. But, yeah, big error. Go on then, Tom. I've given you the open goal. You can score.
I'd like to say I do just think this period generally is one of the most exciting periods for Tottenham and Tottenham fans. You know, I think this was kind of coming off the back of the Juan de Ramos era. And there have been some very good Tottenham teams since, and the Pochettino sides were probably better class, right? But I really think the Red Knapp early kind of Champions League team, for kind of pure adrenaline and thrill, the likes of Van der Vaart and Lennon, etc. This was a really enjoyable period for Spurs. I think I'm going to take Gareth Bale because he was on my team last time, of course. And so I think I have some loyalty there, having brought him through the ranks. It's also worth saying, isn't it, that I am the reigning champion from the first
round. Somehow you are, yes.
In your own mind, maybe.
It was when Tom Barkley was desperate to get you on board, so pathetically gave you the win last time, even though your team was terrible.
I can't deny that.
Well, he is the host, organizer and adjudicator, so I think his voice is final. So it's 1-0 to me, everyone else playing catch up, and I'm going to open with Gareth Bale. I don't know if there's much more that needs to be said, really. Obviously, we all know that he had a slow start, but ultimately came through. And in that season under Andre Villas-Boas, I think it's probably fair to say that AVB's sort of career at Spurs was basically extended only by Bale's incredible season that year, which got Spurs to a respectable league position. So Bale is my headline first.
But guys, does this period not still include when he was trying to be a left back and didn't appear on the winning team for 40 games or whatever it was? Should that not be borne in mind?
No, but you get them at the peak in this period, don't you? So he's getting AVB's Bale.
All right. Yeah, I'm back off here. I've just made a serious error at the start of this.
I'm getting the Bale where he basically, every time he shot, the ball flew into the top corner.
Arguably the greatest sort of period of any player in Premier League history is up there. But don't worry, Marcus, Aaron Lennon's a great choice too. Dan, on to you, mate.
Okay, I'm gutted because Bale was the answer. And I can't believe Marcus didn't pick him. He was comfortably the best player during this period. But I think I'm interested to see who Allnutt gets as manager, because if he gets Sherwood as manager, then he won't get the best out of Bale. He would have played him at centre-half or something. So that'll be one to keep an eye on. But I am going to go for Luka Modric and Rafa van der Vaart. Modric, I think I had in the last game for obvious reasons. He was the second most exciting player at Spurs during this period. He'll control that midfield. He'll run the game. and arguably obviously went on to do even greater things than Bale at Real Madrid. And I think Van der Vaart as well. I mean, arguably that's not the most secure centre midfield, but I reserve the option to move Van der Vaart wide if I need to. Is that allowed? I'm going to say that's allowed. But he was just a fantastic player for two seasons under Redknapp. Played off Crouch brilliantly. I'll say it now. I quite like to get Crouch in my team, so no one pick him. And he's just a proper Spurs kind of guy, I think. A real on and off the pitch, Tottenham-y type player. So I'm happy with that.
I mean, it's a slightly kind of Garth Crooks approach of just putting them all in and just forgetting about the formation and the sort of how the team will gel. But two wonderful players. I mean, I was looking over Van der Vaart in particular when putting this together, and he scored more goals than I remember. I remember scoring some good goals and being a good regular sort of reliable goal scorer from midfield. But 24 goals in 63 league games, pretty impressive. Like, what happened with him?
ADB came in and he didn't really run, I think, very much. And he wanted Sigurdsson to play as his number 10. And he just phased him out. He was such a Redknapp type player, wasn't he, Van der Vaart? He kind of epitomised that, just go and run around a bit. He wasn't the kind of player you necessarily wanted to press or, you know, have detailed tactical instructions for. You just wanted him to sort of be in the right places and play on instinct and do his thing. And I think Spurs were kind of trying to modernise under Piers Boas, and he didn't really fit the bill.
One of the many great things that AVB did during his time at Spurs, getting rid of Rafa that early.
Okay, so it moves back to Tom now.
There was something as well about Van der Vaart. He was like, there's that sort of era where Spurs were linked with people like Rivaldo and Shevchenko and I don't know, all those kind of players they were never, ever going to sign. And it felt like Van der Vaart was, I don't know, maybe sort of second to Edgar Davids. I think I sort of said a similar thing about Edgar Davids. It was kind of one of those signings that you always felt Spurs were linked with but never managed to pull off. And when they actually did manage to get him, it was a really kind of thrilling signing. And I remember that goal against Aston Villa, where he kind of brought it down in the box and just kind of let someone, I can't remember who it was, slide across him and then just banged it in on a sort of half volley. Good pick, Dan. I don't know about midfielder. I would have put him as a forward, I've got to say. And I think already Dan's team is looking unbalanced, fragile, and without any clear sense of direction. It was quite similar to his team last time. So my pick after Gareth Bale, seeing as I'm already, I think, got a significant lead here, I'm going to take Jermaine Defoe because I think in this era, Defoe was such a reliable scorer. And I do think that, you know, the whole like Kane era has slightly left Defoe's time at Spurs in the shade. You know, I think for a while he was so trustworthy, the number of goals he scored. And he had that thing, Defoe, where he kind of got into that area around the edge of the box. And he had that brilliant ability to sort of shift it onto his right foot, make space. And he was just so good at finding the corners. His finishing was absolutely fantastic. And I don't know which season it was. Was it when they hammered Wigan and he scored 5, I think, in that game? 9-1. And that was definitely one of these seasons. So I'm going to take Defoe because I've now got a guaranteed scorer.
Well, there have been better. And I'm about to name 2 of them, because I'm going to go with the big man, the little man. I'm just going to quickly go back to Aaron Lennon. And there are 2 reasons why, I might concede that possibly I could have picked Gareth Bale just ahead of him. But Aaron Lennon scored the first goal that my son, Jago, saw. We went to a Spurs Newcastle game. It was a very special moment. It was a bit traumatic because I lifted Jago up. We went mad. As I plonked him back into the seat had flipped up and he got his legs caught. And he burst into tears. So there were 50,000 people, however many were going mad. Poor old Jago was screaming his head off. But it was a special moment. And I just love the speed of Lennon. And I'll never forget that goal. I think it was the winner against Chelsea back in... This would be before this era, but it was a real rarity in those days for Spurs to win big games. And we beat Chelsea. Lennon scored. So I love him for that. But my strike force, it's little and large. And... let's remember we're getting these players at the peak of their powers. And when this man was good, he was very, very good. I remember, did he not equal or break the Premier League record for assists when Spurs thumped Newcastle? And he scored plenty of goals himself. Emmanuel Adebayor, when he was up for it, was simply magnificent. And when you, as I now am, partner him with Robbie Keane, you have got a brilliant strike force. There's not much left for Dan. I think he could probably just about get Jonathan Obika into his starting 11. But you know what, guys? I've won already because I've got Adebayor and Keane up front with the probing Aaron Lennon, terrifying opposition defences. Who needs Gareth Bale?
Yeah, I mean, Adebayor, again, had far more of an impact at Spurs than I remember. I mean, 33 goals in 79 games. He was very, very good. Robbie Keane in this particular period, slightly less effective. Was this post coming back from Liverpool and only scored 6 league goals in 27 games, but obviously a legend in his own right. And he wasn't just about goals, was he? So given the dearth of other striking options, particularly with Defoe already gone, I can see why you've picked him. But he's maybe not quite as... It's not quite the Robbie Keane you might think he is, Marcus, in this period.
Well, no, he was too busy having a look at all the other clubs he'd supported as a child before he went and moved elsewhere. That was the period, wasn't it, when I... Celtic, I always supported Liverpool. Loved the Tottenham, that was my team. Anyway, he was brilliant. I just, you know, I've got very fond memories. Okay, maybe it wasn't peak Robbie Keane, but you know he was brilliant at every stage of his incredible career.
I don't know how Marcus's players are going to react to him slagging them off, you know, seconds after he's just bought them. It seems like the morale in Buckland 11 is going to be plummeting as we speak. But okay.
Well, I'm in the mood for winding people up, Tom, as you know, with my close friend. And shame we're not doing our favourite managers of the last 10 or 15 years, because there's a German I'd love to include in that list.
I mean, I also don't think Adebayor and Keane, it doesn't really strike me as a great partnership. I don't know, if maybe I'm misremembering, but I don't ever remember them particularly being together. So I'm actually going to go for the kind of the union, the chemistry of, and also because I know it's going to really rattle Dan. So I'm going to take Crouch with Defoe. The brilliant little and large combination, of course, went on to repeat it at Portsmouth. But also Crouch in his own right, you know, delivered some really great Spurs moments. Quite clearly the best of those against AC Milan, I think. Crouch and Defoe up front. I don't think there are many strikers left. So Dan's hopes of winning this round, I think, are almost in tatters already.
I couldn't disagree more.
Dan, I was just going to say, and I might be wrong here, but was it not Peter Crouch who was sent off in that big Champions League game?
It was, Marcus.
And I was furious with Crouch. So I've got to say, for Tom Allnutt, I mean, that's a massive asterisk again. It was probably the biggest game of that era, and your man got himself red carded. I say no more. But equally, I want Dan to be as wound up as possible too. Well, so carry on, Mr.
I'm not wound up. You've both fallen into the trap I set last time of making you pick your strikers early, panicking you into early moves. I can now sit back, relax, fill the rest of my team, safe in the knowledge that I've still got some great options there. Odegaard Johnson, a top player, a real winner. You need a winner in your team. Soldado.
Not for Spurs.
Soldado on his day. Pavlyuchenko, I've always said he's great. Iago Falque could do a false nine job. And I've already got one of the leafless goal scorers on this list in Van der Vaart in my midfield. So goals aren't an issue for me. So I'm very relaxed. I'll come back to it.
Bring in Shaquille Coulthurst in that case.
Just a word on Iago Falque, because he might not get a shout out after this. Maybe he will. I can't think of a player who had as exciting a youth career who didn't go on to sort of fulfil his potential more than him when I looked him up. He played for Real Madrid, Barcelona and Juventus, as well as Bari at youth level. I mean, I guess the fact they kept jumping around these clubs probably wasn't a great indicator of of how he was going to go. And then he went on to play for 12 different clubs at pro career as well. But can anyone else think of a player who was clearly so highly rated as a young kid who just didn't go on to do anything as a professional?
It sounds like he probably had quite a good agent. It wasn't that good. But no, I can't. So I'm going to go for... I'm going to sort out my defence because I'm conscious that my centre midfield could be conceived as open. Not that I view it that way, because I think Van der Vaart's going to put in a shift for me. So I'm going to go for Ledley. I had him last time. No explanation needed. I don't care if he wasn't training during this period. I don't care if he could only swim in Daniel Levy's pool. He will make everyone in that back line and everyone in the team better by virtue of being there. Great on the ball. Still speedy, even to his last, and a real quiet leader by example. So I'm having Ledley in there, and I'm going to have Jan Vertonghen next to him. I imagine he only got a season during this period we're doing, but nonetheless, you know, a fantastic footballer, great on the ball, adds balance to that back line. Two seasons, Tom's telling me, so there you go. Adds balance with the left foot, can play out, and then already my team's, that spine's just looking so progressive. You're not getting the ball off me. Bale's not going to get the ball, so it doesn't matter how good he is. So yeah, King and Vertonghen.
Yeah, Ledley King obviously retired sort of midway through this, but he did get 47 games in the league before then, 53 overall. So this is pretty decent Ledley King time. I think during this period he also went to the World Cup, didn't he, in 2010? Even if he, on reflection, I don't know how much he played, I can't really remember that, but he definitely did play that period. So there are a couple of other defenders who might be kind of red herrings in there from an appearance point of view, with big names, but perhaps not quite the impact during this period that you might think. So I'll be intrigued to see if they get picked up later. Anyway, back to Tom.
Yeah, typically dull and dreary picks from Dan. Same as last time. Same players, same lack of imagination. And it will be the same result. He was last, wasn't he, last time, Tom?
I think so.
So, I mean, I've already got Crouch and Defoe, great strike force. I've got Bale, the best player in the world at this point. So I suppose I should probably address some sort of spinal issues. I'm going to go into my central midfield, and I see there are some good options here, but I am a little bit hazy as to who was playing well when. I mean, I still think Moussa Dembele, for example, Tom, at this point, was not quite the Moussa Dembele under Poch. He was, you know, struggling with some injury issues. He was still sort of even thought of as a bit of an attacking midfielder, almost striker when he came from Fulham. So I think he might be a red herring, but I might be wrong there. I'm going to go for some leadership and some tenacity in Scott Parker, who I think, I mean, there's some good central midfielders in here. Sandro as well, for example, was fantastic for Spurs for a couple of seasons. But I think Scott Parker really did find his, I don't know if he would say it was his peak of his career, probably because he'll think that at Charlton he was kind of the all-round midfielder. And definitely by this point, he was a kind of defensive, tackling, you know, more of a pivot. But I do think he was fantastic for Spurs. And I think this coincided with him returning to the England fold and even captaining England at one point.
Well, just on Parker, I mean, are you saying about the peak of his career? I think he won the Football Writers Award for West Ham when they got relegated. I actually was at that one, I remember it. And all those years ago, this must be, what, 2013, something like that, 2012. And so that was probably, from a personal point of view, it was such a strange season because obviously West Ham went down. And I think he's the only player to win that award and also get relegated. But at Spurs, he had two... what seemed to be pretty solid seasons. And I think you're right, he played quite a lot for England during that period. But then he was also then sold on to Fulham after just 2 years. So does that give an indication that maybe he didn't quite hit the heights that people were expecting?
I think there were some injury problems towards the end. And he was slightly less kind of consistent in his in being able to play all the time. And obviously there were other players coming through. They were signing other players who, Dembele, Sandro, I think, who were sort of ready to take over. But, you know, I think in those two seasons, Parker was a pretty outstanding player for Spurs. And it's easy to forget that in that kind of Van der Vaart, Modric team. So I'm going to put Parker, and I think I'll probably give him the armband as well.
Yeah, okay. That hasn't affected my selection policy at all. I've obviously got the number one strike force of Robbie Keane and Emmanuel Adebayor. I've got Aaron Lennon buzzing around, terrorizing everybody. And just behind him, at right back, I've got a man who obviously went on to win lots of honours elsewhere, but surely regrets ever leaving Tottenham, and that's Kyle Walker. You know, that was a period, and Tom Hayes mentioned it, you know, under Redknapp in particular, when we had so much pace at both right back and left back, and I'm very tempted to come up with both my fullbacks at this stage. But I'm going to go with Kyle Walker in that right back position. I've looked long and hard at the career of Bongani Kamalo and decided reluctantly that he doesn't quite get into the starting 11. Neither does Dominic Ball. I am so tempted to go with my left back, who was at the peak of his powers then, but I'm not. I'm going to pick one of my central defenders and a man who scored the winning goal for our piece of silverware during this period. And he had injury problems, but again, we're talking about men, defenders, whatever, who were at the peak of their powers. And when Jonathan Woodgate was playing Super... Hang on, Tom's shaking his head here. Oh, no, it was 2008, wasn't it? Right, oh, I didn't actually select him. That goal against Chelsea was in the 2008 final. Oh, I'm a year out. I mean...
You let him off the hook there, Tom.
Well, he went for Aaron Lennon. I feel like he needed some help. Kyle Walker is a definite shout. He was fantastic for Spurs during this period. Jonathan Woodgate is the aforementioned red herring. Three appearances during this period. Oh, so I'm going to save you there, Marcus. Pick somebody else.
Thank you. In that case, because I was umming and ahhing, I'm going for both my fullbacks at this stage. And the man who burst onto the scene with that magnificent winner, I think it was, certainly strike against Arsenal when he was a youngster. And for a period and during this spell, I think Danny Rose was the best left back in the country. So I've got Rose on the left. I got Kyle Walker on the... This team is so exciting.
Well, Danny Rose... Kyle Walker, very, very good during this period. Danny Rose is more the kind of final seasons of this period. He took a little while. Obviously, for the Arsenal goal, he was playing midfield, wasn't he? And it was only really the final two seasons of this area that he played a lot. Actually, it was your man Benoit Assou-Ekotto, I think you picked last time, Marcus Buckland, who had... far more appearances during this time at left back for Spurs, 109 compared to in the league compared to Danny Rose's 38. So perhaps he was.
Yeah, but 38's decent. 38's decent, isn't it?
And 59 overall, and they were some of them were very, very good. So yes, it looks good on paper at least.
I think we need to be honest that neither Walker or Rose were that great during this period. I know Walker had a couple of seasons in the first team, but it wasn't until Pochettino came in that they really turned into top players. He's blundered there and you let him off with Woodgate.
Well, I did. Walker had 102 league games during this period, so I think he played quite a lot. Maybe not the first season, but and also he was as Dan, you'll remember from when we spoke to him at Spurs for England duty back in, I think, October, he was referencing when he got first called up for England, and I think it was 2011 when he got his first call up into the England squad. So he can't be doing too badly at that period.
To the hugely successful 2011 England squad.
Yeah. Listen, mate, you just go ahead and select Bongani Kamalo and we'll move on, shall we?
Indeed. Tom?
I mean, it's difficult. Being in the middle, when you're sort of the central rotation in this game, it's quite difficult because you're constantly having to pick, whereas everyone else gets more time to think and they get two picks, right? So I'm actually surprised that Dan and Marcus haven't made better choices, given they've had so much time to consider. But I think my choice here is tricky. I'm actually looking down the list and it is kind of surprising how few really outstanding players there are. It makes you realise that this was a fun period to be a sort of Spurs fan. But actually, there wasn't that much talent, really. Like, because a lot of these players, as we're seeing, are kind of players who were about to get good. Even Modric, obviously, you know, got better and better. But, I mean, Rose, Walker, I mean, Dembele, you know, they all kind of, Eriksen, they all got better later on. This was very much a kind of formative period for Spurs. Anyway, I think I'm going to head into defence and I'm going to take Assou-Ekotto, because there aren't that many good left backs. Asuakota was 100% a better left back than Rose, I think, at this time. Rose was still coming through.
Tom, I'm pretty sure that when I picked Asuakota a few weeks ago, you were full of critical observations about him. How extraordinary that you've changed your mind so quickly.
I think in this period specifically, Marcus, Asuakota really came into his own, you know? And I remember that brilliant goal he scored against Liverpool, I think it was, where he sort of came out of nowhere and scored an absolute thunderbolt from range. But generally, my abiding memories of Asuakota are just a very sort of nonchalant, flamboyant kind of player who loved to sort of take an extra touch in defence, often overplayed when overplaying at the back definitely wasn't in fashion. And of course, everyone knows about his whole kind of, you know, doesn't even like football, just plays to get paid kind of thing, which is exactly the kind of ruthless, clinical attitude from my team of winners. So I'm slotting Asuakota into left back.
What do you think he's doing now? He's 39. He retired, I think, a few years ago. Do you think when's the last time you think he even watched a match or kicked a ball? Would it literally have been when he was last playing?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I think I read something. I think he's a pretty successful businessman now. I think he's got his own kind of thing outside football going on. So yeah, but I doubt he watches Spurs. Or maybe he does. Maybe it's one of those things that when you're a player, you don't really enjoy the game because it's your job. And then when you retire, maybe now he's kind of rediscovered the love.
Well, there were rumours he was a porn star.
What? Is that right?
I'm serious, yeah. I definitely remember reading that he had to play down claims that he'd gone into being a porn star. I don't know what
I Google that now, but I'm not sure I want that on my search history.
You need to get the context on that.
I don't in your role as kind of allegations about my players from Dan. They're unfounded and he doesn't have them as facts. So,
successful businessman. I mean, that's quite a vague sort of description.
His diet wasn't good. Didn't he like a Mars bar and a Tesco meal deal on his way to the ground?
Just the Juan de Ramos McDonald's.
I'm sure he was in McDonald's as well that day, definitely.
Former Tottenham coach Clive Allen has claimed ex-Spurs defender Benoit Asuakota once told him he wanted to become a porn star when his career ended.
Yeah, well, listen, Clive Allen doesn't know anything about, anyway, Benoit Asuakota.
So. Oh, this is better than the McDonald's chat. It's interesting.
I wish he'd been rock hard in our defence a little more often back in the day.
Very good. It's interesting what Tom was saying about the amount of players and the lack of talent. There are a lot of players during this period. And I think, you know, Dan, you were making the point a month ago or so when Spurs released those legacy numbers, how it was kind of a pay tribute to the job that Poch did in terms of how few there were during that period, because he just had the same amount of players. He didn't actually get, you know, obviously we know he didn't get back that well, but also part of that is because those players were so good. During this period, it's like they tried someone and they tried somebody else and they just kept going through it. And the fact that the top scorer from a striker point of view, in fact, from the whole list, is Jermaine Defoe with a not particularly, you know, overwhelmingly good haul. Does that just sum up just during this period that Spurs just weren't very good or what?
I think they had a handful of really world-class, exciting players, but they've already been picked. You know, they had Bale and Modric and the guy I'm about to pick as well and a few others, but they didn't have the kind of depth, I think, of quality they've got now. There are a lot of kind of raggedy ends. And I think we're going to end up with some of them at kind of fullback and on either side of our midfield. But I am completely in agreement with you guys that there aren't a lot of world-class players. So I'm going to pick someone who is beyond question or was beyond question world-class in this period in Hugo Lloris. Spurs obviously signed him as an extremely modern sweeper keeper. He was the top of his game in this time, a great shot stopper, really quick off his line and kind of considered a really modern player. Obviously, took him a while to get in the team ahead of Friedel, but when he did, I think he sort of proved a top goalkeeper and value for money. So he's going behind my defence of King and Vertonghen, and that's hard to beat. In fact, no one is going to beat that. I don't need to worry about left-back because you guys have both picked your left-back, but there's not any or many left on the list, so I'm going to have to improvise there, I think. What else am I going to do?
Well, just give up if I were you, mate, the way you've gone so far. It's just between me and Tom.
I'm flying, Marcus. I'm flying.
I think it's actually quite nice looking at these teams so far. You've all got some good
Kenneth McAvoy. Kenneth McAvoy is still available, Dan.
I am going to ignore your facetious suggestions and go with...
He's really wants this player, whoever it is.
I'm wrestling with him.
Oh, this is great management here. Oh, I really want to pick... Oh, who's left?
This is where it gets exciting, actually. I'm looking at the list, and I think most of the top players have gone, and now it's what do you do now? As Dan is proving.
Jack Bathroom's available.
Is that how you pronounce it? Bathroom?
No, I'm not sure, actually. Bathram.
Is there a time limit here, Tom? Or what? Dan's had about 10
minutes to come. Dan's got to get to Christmas too, so it's his own time he's wasting.
Can I have Sandro and move Van der Vaart? I never said where Van der Vaart was playing.
You could play him. I did say to you, he's down as midfielder. You could have him out wide.
Yeah.
I mean, we had. So, do you want to do that?
So what I'm doing, and I did this last time, and it's a great tactic. Left wingers weren't really a thing in this era of football. They didn't really become a thing until 2014. Everyone knows that. So I'm going to have Van der Vaart's just going to float from the left, and I'm going to put Sandro in there next to Modric. Sandro was quality during this period. Really, I think he was on the way to being considered a world-class holding midfielder. An injury ruined his career. And again, just continuing a theme of my team, which I think is really important, it's got heart. There's a real warmth there. All these guys are Spurs through and through. Tom Allnutt's picked a lot of sort of mercenary type players. I've really gone with people that care about the club, and that's going to give me the edge. So I've got Sandro Ranieri in there. He's going to go next to Modric, and Van der Vaart's going to have a lovely kind of free role creating in the final third.
Sandro, legend, what a character. I actually ghost wrote his column during the 2014 World Cup. We had him as a guest columnist because it was in Brazil. And he came in, and it was just sort of before all the, I guess, social media videos were doing, did like they do today. And we had him doing all these random little phrases in Portuguese, like, oh no, penalties again. he was quite a character. And he's often spotted at Spurs games these days, isn't he? He's regularly does things for them. So he's someone that a lot of fans like a lot. So now it's back to Tom.
Yeah, Dan coming out with a goalkeeper and another holding midfielder in his team of centre-halves. I mean, the public overwhelmingly rejected Dan's negative, dreary tactics last time. And he's going for it again. It's the ultimate expression of hubris. In my flair team, which everyone loved and received brilliantly last time, I'm going to bring in a player, not a mercenary, just lots of skill, lots of talent, freedom of expression, unpredictability. I'm going to put Nico Kranjčar on my right wing. I've got Bale, who's got the speed and the kind of width on the left. And I'm going to bring Kranjčar on the right, who I think in this sort of Redknapp team, weaved in off the right, created a lot from central midfield, joined in up front, scored goals. He wasn't always a regular. I do accept that because Lennon was, of course, good competition out there. But he was actually a pretty impactful player for Spurs. And for a couple of seasons, he was quite a very important squad player. He brought a lot of creativity. He was a bit unlucky with injuries. I do remember one game against Manchester City where he was particularly outstanding. So I'm going to bring in Kranjčar on my right wing of my midfield four.
9 goals in 49 league games for Kranjčar. So
That's almost a ratio of 1 in 4. That's 25% there of goals in the games that Kranjčar played. So I think that's a pretty useful addition to my side.
Feels like you'll have to get Harry as manager now if you've got Kranjčar.
Maybe I will. Maybe I won't.
We'll see. Marcus.
Okay, well, just to remind everybody, this amazing lineup I've already got with Keenan Adebayor up front, Lennon and Walker down the right, Danny Rose bombing up the left. Obviously, I'm going to need some stability in the centre of my defence, and I will come to that shortly. but I'm going to address my midfield. I'm always just a bit panicky here because I know it's 2009 to 2014, so it's hard to remember exactly when these players were at their best. But when you're class, you are class, and Christian Eriksen is pure class, except perhaps occasionally in really big games where he does your head in and can't get past the first defender with his corners. But aside from that, he will pop up with key goals at big moments, and you know any team is going to be better off with him pulling the strings, and Keane and Adebayor will just revel in his execution just behind them. So Christian Eriksen in the heart of my midfield, and alongside him, a man who I think it's easy to forget again. When he was good, he was very, very good. And he's back now. He's had all sorts of sort of issues, of course, away from football, but he's been exonerated. And I think he's back playing international football again now and captaining his country. And Gylfi Sigurdsson, I thought, was a quality player.
Back to Christian Eriksen. Your point about goals seems quite key for him because he was only signed in the final season of this period. Probably the only success story about the Gareth Bale money. And maybe Dan can sort of reflect on that in a minute. But he actually scored 10 goals in 36 games that season, 7 in the league. I mean, not to be overlooked. So I don't really think of Eriksen as a goal scorer. Obviously not now with the way he plays in a holding role, but he was a real threat, it seems, during that season.
Oh, I mean, listen, he was quality, Tom. You can't ignore him. And I know there were frustrations that sometimes in the really big games, he perhaps wouldn't turn up to the degree that you wanted him to. But then I'll never forget, for example, the goal he scored against Brighton. Obviously, it was a few years after that, which got us into the Champions League. I mean, the guy was great. And obviously, his backstory is pretty special as well. So I'm always going to have a soft spot for him. I appreciate that. I mean, the Sigurdsson thing is difficult in some ways, but we are talking just about footballing period back then.
Morale in the Marcus squad plummeting with every round that goes by. Not only Adebayor and Keane up front, you know, sparks flying there, and now Sigurdsson in midfield. Okay, so here we go. Back to the serious stuff. Back to the teams that can really win this competition. I will concede that I haven't yet addressed my defence. People know that my gung-ho attitude means I tend to prioritise the flair players and the forwards. But there are still a couple of central defenders picks who I think have been missed here. And the one I'm going to go for is William Gallas, who was very much a kind of stopgap Redknapp signing. Free transfer, of course, the Arsenal history. But actually was pretty good for Spurs. And in the 2011 season particularly, he played very well in their Champions League campaign. I remember in the knockouts against Milan, which was the one before Real Madrid, I think, he played superbly over those two legs. He often filled in at right back and at left back, and I reserved the right to move him around depending on the options that are left in a couple of rounds' time. But he was, you know, covering for the likes of Ledley King and Dan's team, Michael Dawson, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Gallas was actually a short term, but actually a pretty good defender for Spurs. So I'm going to slot him into my defence, Tom.
I mean, can I just say, you can never forgive Gallas for scoring for Chelsea against Spurs in the last minute of a game. And I don't care how good he was subsequently. You can't be having him in a Tottenham team. I mean, we were third choice after Chelsea and Arsenal. That's unacceptable. Tom, what respect I had for your managerial and coaching skills has just gone down the bath plug, down the Jack bathroom plug.
What I've always said about my team is it's got flair and also a winning mentality. And it's interesting, Marcus coming up with that when he's got Emmanuel Adebayor up front. I mean, I'm wondering how that applies to his own squad.
Well, because he was making amends for what he realises was a very bad part of his career up the road. He was misguided back then.
Well, I said Tom would have a team full of mercenaries and he denied it and then he picked Gallas. Right, I'm not at all concerned about any of these recent picks from you guys. I don't need to worry about my front two because you've both picked yours. I don't need to worry about my left back. So that means I'm down to right back, right wing, and manager. Now, what I was conscious of last time was that my team was technically superb, but there was not a huge amount of pace. So I want a bit of pace back there, or maybe up there. I'm actually going to go for Andros Townsend. I'm tempted to pick Henry on the right. I'm going to have inverted wingers. Townsend's going to be out there, cutting in on his deadly left foot. Van der Vaart's going to be on the left, kind of inverting and floating. I think I like that balance. You've got the guile and you've got the pace. Now, Townsend, I think, would have been a very, very useful player for Spurs had he not clashed with Pochettino. There was that incident where he sparred with a fitness coach, I think, on the pitch after he hadn't played, and that kind of spelled the end of his career. And during this time, let's not forget, I think he was called up for England. He scored a lot of crackers. Roy Hodgson was or have I got my dates a bit muddled? No, I think in this period that would have been right. Going into Euro 2014, So he was a guy who scored a lot of goals. He had a lot of pace. He could cross it. He had a bit of both feet. I'm very happy with Andros Townsend on the right.
Anyone tried any chicken feet before?
Well, I mean, that's what's giving him this new lease of life, and fair play to him at Luton. But Dan, I mean, we've occasionally this season had a go at Kulusevski for being a little predictable. I mean, Andros Townsend, you just knew every single time what he was going to do, and one in 50 might fly towards the top corner. But come on, I mean, he's not getting into your best 11, is he?
You always knew what Iron Robin was going to do, Marcus, but when you're as good as Robin and Townsend, it's very hard to stop. So
great comparison.
He's in that. He's in there. And so now I'm down to right back or manager. And I'm going to throw a curveball because I think people are tempted. People who aren't students of the game like myself, the Allnuts and Bucklands of the world, are probably going to leave their manager till last. But I'm going to go with Harry because he was clearly the standout manager this period by a distance. You don't want to have AVB muddling things up. Certainly don't want Tim Sherwood. He'd ruin any chance I have, regardless of what 11 I get out there. So, yeah, I'm going for Harry to preside over Andros Townsend and co.
Good luck with that.
I mean, more predictable picks for a very predictable team. What is the sort of feeling now on Redknapp, do you think, looking back? I mean, we've had Pochettino, had... blimey, who else we had? Conte, Mourinho. The whole kind of like thing of Spurs now having very elite sort of managers. Looking back now, where does Redknapp kind of sit with Spurs fans, do you think?
Right up there. Right up there, I'd say.
Well, I think, honestly, before this morning, I would have said that he underwhelmed slightly given the quality he had at his disposal, and that if Spurs had had a better manager, a more kind of modern and progressive manager in that period, they might have done even better. But now looking at this list, as we've kind of come to realise, I think there are a handful of top players on there. But it's not like he had a whole team of great players in their prime, did he? There were a lot of kind of spare parts, I think, filling in sort of odd positions.
I think Harry was excellent and he really took Spurs on. And as you say, the likes of Modric... under him, it took a while before he was the Modric that we know now. And to be honest, that probably never even happened for Tottenham. It was more at Real Madrid. So I do think, and you look at the lack of a sort of unreal striker like Harry Kane went on to be. He didn't have him either. And I feel like the England talk back in ahead of when Capello left was fully justified. And I very specifically remember going to Spurs Newcastle in the January, I think, when, or maybe it was February, after Harry wanted to... There was a lot of England talk at the time, and Spurs ended up signing just Louis Saha and Ryan Nelson, which ended up being, if not terrible signings, then very short-term, didn't really help Tottenham. But they so happened to... I think Saha scored one of his only goals against Newcastle that day when I think Spurs won 5-0. So it was a pretty dreadful day for me. I feel like, he didn't really get back towards the end when it was going really, really well. And And overall, he did a remarkable job.
I totally agree. You've got to remember, he took over from Juan de Ramos, who obviously won some silverware, but then it all went horribly wrong. He took Spurs from the relegation zone into the Champions League and played some really exciting football along the way and bought in some, you know, it's a bit of a cliche perhaps, but some proper Tottenham players who did things the Tottenham way. So I really think that Harry was the start of this, you know, wonderful period really that we've enjoyed, aside from we've actually had a lot of horrible moments, haven't we, in recent times, but it was the start of making us a regular top four, top five team. So I'll always look back on him with great fondness. And I have to say that I think that Tom A and I are left with an awkward choice as to which of our managers we'll have. Is it my turn? Or
it'll be Tom's turn in a second. But that's a good point, Marcus. When we talk of the big six these days, and now potentially big seven with Newcastle, obviously Tottenham is one of those. But I don't think despite winning their last trophy, you know, before Harry turned up, I don't really think back then I really considered them to be part of a big six. Or if it was, it was only briefly before then. It was really from the Harry period on then. And I don't really know why in the end he didn't get the England job and Hodgson did. I mean, I guess people will have their own sort of thoughts on that. But at the time, I do feel like he was the standout choice from the way Spurs have been playing. So, you know, it was a shame in the end that he didn't get that gig.
He was, although I wouldn't say that was the thing that very much brought his Tottenham tenure to an end. It was very obvious, wasn't it, in that kind of last 6 months.
What, flirting with it?
Yeah, he'd taken his eye off the ball a bit. He was in very kind of Redknapp style. And I thought it was a bit unfair almost that people kind of criticised him for that, because that was just how he was. That was his style as a Tottenham manager as well. And when he got asked questions, he answered them, you know. But that definitely didn't help Spurs in that season. It didn't help his Tottenham career either. I've always got the sense that Spurs fans haven't always held him in that high regard, but. You know,
is that because of West Ham? Is that just his?
I think it's because of the way it ended. I think that the sort of suspicions that Spurs fans had about Redknapp, that he wasn't sort of Tottenham through and through. There was that comment, wasn't it, where, you know, they'd never had it so good. I think that really stuck. And I think the way it ended, when he was kind of looking for something better, I think there was always a slight kind of bitterness towards the idea that maybe he thought he was better than the job, and probably Spurs fans thought they could get someone better than Redknapp. So it was always a slightly clunky relationship, but actually it was very good and very exciting for a while.
But I also think, Tom, he was an experienced man, and he knew that as good as you're doing at a club, it only takes a few results and you're out of favour. And maybe deep down, he also felt that some of the Spurs fans were never fully going to accept him. I reckon he would have been a really good England manager. I mean, you look back over the past 40, 50 years, the two men who should have managed England, probably who didn't, were Harry Redknapp and Brian Clough back in the day. And there were obviously reasons, personal reasons, et cetera, why they didn't get that job. And Harry also had to deal with his legal case during the latter stages of his time at Spurs. But I thought he put together a fantastic team with some really exciting players. And as we've highlighted, there wasn't a real depth of talent, but some of those great European nights, some of those great London derby victories as well, they were during Harry's era. And I'll never forget those.
Right, what this chat about Redknapp has allowed me to do is to scour the options that are left. And there aren't that many. It is true, but I think I'm going to go for an obvious one in goal, which has been left out, and probably the one that Dan should have gone for, because Lloris, when he first arrived, did take some time to settle in, and actually, you know, he wasn't really in the team consistently in those first few months. And I actually think in this era specifically, Brad Friedel was Tottenham's outstanding goalkeeper. He was very consistent after a time when they had gone through Heredia Gomez, who, you know, was technically a decent keeper but made a series of rash decisions. Friedel came in and basically gave the Redknapp side some stability, the sense that we have a goalkeeper we can rely on every week. And okay, Friedel probably wouldn't survive in the current era. There's, you know, he just kind of squeezed this Tottenham period into a time before everyone expected keepers to do a lot more with their feet and sweep up, which a Lloris eventually, of course, did provide. But as a goalkeeper who saved very well, was good from crosses, very reliable, and occasionally produced those Brad Friedel vintage performances against the big teams. There were actually a few better, and he was a really important character, I think, in that dressing room as well. So I'm sticking Brad Friedel in my net, which I think brings me, Tom, I think I've only got two or three picks left. Is that where we're at? Closing in now, I think.
Three plus the manager. That's a good point about Lloris. Going back to our first ever pod of this relaunch pod, it was obviously all about Hugo. And I seem to remember, Dan, you saying that in the... After his first season, he was almost tempted to leave the club. So clearly it hadn't gone that well in that first year. Am I misremembering? Am I thinking about Son instead? I know that definitely happened with him. But
that's definitely true of Son. I think Lloris took a while to get in the team, but he was well in the side. But the chaos of the Sherwood period, I think, made him think twice. From memory, I can't remember exactly what I'd said, but he was obviously a big European keeper at the time. He was already in the France team, and he wasn't going to be hanging around at a kind of club that was sinking under someone like Tim Sherwood, frankly, given the chaos. So I think that may have been it.
I've got two picks. I've got two picks to further improve a team that is clearly, when we reiterate our starting 11, is going to be much better than the other two. Now, obviously, the goalkeeping situation is a little... bleaker for me, but as you've both pitched your keepers, I will come back to that one. I really cannot believe, unless I've missed this, that neither of my quotes rivals have not selected Michael Dawson in the centre of defence. I mean, magnificent, and surely he was at his prime during this period, an absolute inspiration. I mean, I'm loving my Danny Rose, Michael Dawson, Kyle Walker, plus one other, which is proving slightly harder. But Dawson, the leader, super guy as well. Obviously, still very much part of the club now. Really, I would have been tempted to put him in straight away. Aside from Ledley King, I don't think you've got a better example of a home, actually not homegrown, but of a guy who felt like he was a homegrown talent, was there for such a long time and clearly has the club in his heart. So Michael Dawson is in the centre of my defence. Just to complete my midfield, and I think I'm going for him again because I had him a few weeks ago and everybody got in touch and said, inspirational. Really, people forget how good this guy was. You know, he can do a job just about anywhere. He's going to be playing on the left of my midfield. He's got a motor. He can get back. He can tackle. He can score. Perfect foil for Sigurdsson, Eriksson and Lennon. And that is Clint Dempsey. They're silent. They know I've cracked this. I have cracked this. Oh, this is such a good team. It doesn't matter who the manager's going to be.
I thought Dan's team, Sandro, was going to have to do a lot of work in that midfield, but Dempsey, Sigurdsson, Eriksson, Lennon. I mean, Eriksson at this point is a proper attacking midfielder. That is one attacking team. Dempsey only had 1 year, didn't he, at Spurs? And he did actually quite well, at least stats-wise. I can't remember his performances, but then he was off to America. What was the story there?
I hadn't realised he only played one season. Is that right?
Yeah. Looking back at it, so I'll have to find it. Yeah, so Clint Dempsey only signed 2012, 2013, then was sold the year after. He obviously came from Fulham. Memory serves for about sort of 6 million, 7 million. 29 league games. Hold on. This is great podcasting. 7 league goals. So pretty decent return. But then he was off to Seattle Sounders straight after that. And he stayed there for a good long time. Maybe it was just a good contract or he wanted to go back to America at that point. But I seem to remember being pretty solid for Tottenham.
Good. Very good. Excellent. Outstanding.
And just on Michael Dawson... Yeah, you're absolutely right. Unlike Jonathan Woodgate, this was Dawson's absolute prime time at Spurs. In fact, there are only three players who played more games than he did during this period. That was Bale, Lennon and Jermaine Defoe, and not by many. So, yeah, he was... I am actually, on reflection, surprised the other guys haven't gone for Michael Dawson as well.
Well, I'm not, because I haven't got a clue what they're doing. But anyway, it's so I've got Dawson and Lennon, two of the three who played the most number of games. I mean, should we finish this now before we complete the 11s?
Dawson's a good pick. I always thought with Dawson that he sort of needed King alongside him to kind of to really have someone next to him who could cover for him, provide some of the aspects of his game which he wasn't so good at. He was a very solid, good defender. I don't argue with that. But I think, for example, if you look at how many times he played for England, I don't know if you have those stats, Tom. I don't think it was very many. And admittedly, this was a time when England had some very good centre-backs. But I think if he'd been, you know, a real top-class defender, then I think he would have been in that conversation. And he never really was. I always thought Dawson's kind of presence in this Spurs team was very much for his character, his personality, his leadership, his kind of fitness, consistency, et cetera, as much as it was for his technical ability as a defender. What are you saying there? Four fingers, four times for England.
Four caps, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, not that many, but I mean, you know, it's,
well,
you know, not
that but big. But if you base, I mean, let's go back. The great Steve Perryman, scandalously overlooked. I think he played once, and I think few would argue that he's one of the greatest players in Tottenham's history. And Alan Hansen, I think, only ever played 17 times for Scotland. I mean, if he was playing in the modern era, he'd have played 117 times. So I don't think you can criticise or relegate Dawson's abilities because of his lack of international caps.
There's another defender on there who's got one England cap and one goal as well, who we've overlooked. But I'm not sure he gets an AMT. Any guess? Scored in his debut, never played again.
Oh,
centre back.
One game for Stephen England.
Corker. Stephen Corker, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Mm.
Good stat.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Dawson's probably the best player in Marcus's team, so it's not a bad pick. True. I think I will now address my central midfield. I've already got Parker, Bale, Cranchar. It's pretty good. There aren't that many options left, it has to be said. I mean, who is Paul Jose Lumpopin?
Good question. Is that the main takeaway from this? He did not play at all for Spurs. He came through as a trainee. He went on to was sold to Saint-Liège, I presume in Belgium, in 2011. So he wasn't really in this period for too long.
So what is the criteria, Tom, for this list if you've never played for Spurs? I mean, could Dan be in this list, for example?
Well, I don't know. For some, they must have been named as being part of the first team squad during this period. Why are there some people on here that are both on Soccer Base's page, which, you know, for any people out there, it's one of the best for looking up football squads and stats, as well as Wikipedia. I mean, there are a lot, as opposed to all the other academy players who were about the club who weren't in there. I don't know. He's in there anyway. He actually went on to have a bit of a career, and he's only 31 now. He was last spotted at Incheon United in South Korea.
And what, I mean, Las Nombaks, who's that?
I mean, he does sound like a championship manager, regen kind of name, that show. Yeah. But yeah, he didn't play at all either.
I'm going to go in midfield for Wilson Palacios, who, admittedly, there have been some good defensive midfielders around this time. But I actually think if we're talking about peak players, and Palacios was a bit of a kind of in and then out before you kind of noticed player at Tottenham. But actually, he had one really good season. And I think this was probably the 9-10 season. I'm just looking up here on Wiki. And if we look down the list of appearances in the Premier League, for example, only one player played more that season than Palacios. And this was the year that Spurs finished fourth in the league under Redknapp and qualified for the Champions League. So it was a pretty important season for Spurs. And Palacios was a really important player in that team. His energy, his physicality. He was a really popular player for Tottenham at that time. And okay, injuries kind of hit him a little bit hard, unfortunately, and it didn't quite last. But if we're talking about peak, Tom, and that is the criteria here, if I get a peak Palacios in my midfield, then I think that's a pretty good deal. So I'm going to put him alongside Scott Parker.
I think it's a pretty good shout. I think, seeing as you've all completed your midfield now, I think it's a bit harsh on Tom Hoddleston that he's been overlooked. I think this might have been the time where he scored that wonder goal against Man City with a thud of a shot. But yeah, I mean, Palacios was really good that season, so a fair pick. Although you do now have Parker and Palacios your central midfield, so I would worry about creativity, but there you go. I guess you got Bale. Bale can carry the show anyway.
Well, and don't forget Tom Cranchar. So you've got Bale and Cranchar. You know, it's two of the best wingers available.
Can I point out also, mentioning Flair, but none of us have gone for Eric Lamella, although I suspect that he only came in towards the end of this period.
Yes, remember he was one of the seven brought in.
Right, yeah.
I mean, looking at that seven, of which, you know, a lot of are on there, the likes of Vlad Kirakesh, Soldado, obviously. Eriksson's the only overwhelming success. But what do you make of Lamella? Lamella during this period, I mean, he had a bit of an injury hit first season as well, so I wouldn't really consider him.
He barely played. He had a back injury.
Yeah, nine league appearances.
I would have been tempted, but he barely played.
But from a wider point of view, do you consider him to have been a successful signing in the sort of grand scheme of things?
No.
I think, sadly, I'll always be a Lamella stan, and it became a bit of a joke for a while because I think he was a Spurs culture war on social media, really. Like, he really divided the fan base in quite a strong way, and some people hated him and some people kind of loved to love him, and I fell in the latter camp. But I think you have to say that given he was signed as this Flair winger, essentially with the Bale money to replace the goals and assists of Bale, you know, that's what Spurs kind of thought they were getting. I mean, the plan with the seven was to spread it out a bit more. They knew they weren't going to replace Bale like for like, but Lamella was supposed to carry the lion's share of the creative burden, and he really ended up being quite a tactically smart player who was, you know, a good cog in Pochettino's team for a while and was quite a good presser and decent on the ball, but he never really had the output in the final third that was expected, and he was never fit enough really to put together a, you know, proper body of work.
He was expensive as well, wasn't he? Even at the time, I think he was about 30-odd million.
Yes, Dan's hit the nail on the head there. He was injury prone. He would get way too many yellow cards. And I think probably what sums him up, I'm pretty sure I was there when he did score a wonder goal against Burnley quite a few years ago, which was very, very special. But I think the goal we'll always remember was against Arsenal. And, you know, it was a heck of a finish, but we lost the game. And I kind of think that sums up Lamella to a degree. And I'm glad he's doing well in Spain, and he's got ability, but no, it never quite worked, and he was there for a long time, wasn't he?
Right, I'm up. Okay, so just a reminder for listeners, I've got Lloris, no right back, King Vertonghen, no left back, Townsend, Modric, Sandro, Van der Vaart, and I need a pair of strikers as well. I don't need to worry about the strikers or the left back because they're...
You really need to worry about them, bearing in mind who's left.
So, pipe down. I am going to go for... I'm going to go for Chorluka as my right back. I had him last time. I really like him. I'm in it to win it, right? He's a very good technical player. He's a good defender. He was part of Spurs Champions League run under Redknapp. He's in.
And he's still playing.
I don't know, but that's
no. Do you know? He went to Lokomotiv. Well, I guess he's playing for Lokomotiv Moscow. So I can't remember what the deal is with Russian clubs at the moment. But he joined them from Spurs in 2012, and he's been there ever since. Which I
loyal servant.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Anyway, sorry, carry on.
Anyway, I was a bit torn between him and Chimbonda, but I realised I'm going to need Chimbonda on the left, I'm afraid. My left side is looking quite inverted as it stands, but that's the way I like it. I've never really believed in left-footers. So I'm having Chimbonda over there on the left because I've really run out of other credible options at left-backs. I don't really fancy Norton. He's also a right-footer. Zeki Friars, no. And I think that's it, really. So...
Dorian De Vite. I do remember that name. How many games did he play?
Centre half, I'm afraid. So I'm not having him. So yeah, I'm having Chorluka and Chimbonda as my fullbacks.
I feel kind of compelled to tell you because I did say about Woodgate, but Chimbonda didn't play a single appearance during this period.
Yeah.
He came.
Okay, right. I'm,
do you remember he got re-signed? I think by Harry because obviously he won the League Cup and then he left again, and then he came back, but then he didn't play. So
but that doesn't bother me at all.
Okay, so we're sticking with him.
He's only recently hung up his boots. He's in the management game now. He's a canny player, and he'd be able to step up despite the lack of training time and game time. I'm not going to do a Marcus. I don't want another chance on this. I'm happy with Chimbonda as my left back.
Do you know, you're overlooking another fullback who I was so shocked to find out played 71 times for Spurs during this period.
Scotsman?
Nope.
No. Ryan Fredericks?
Kyle Norton.
I did mention him. Yeah, I'm not having that.
Oh, did you? Oh, you just didn't fancy him. Sorry. Okay. I was surprised. I couldn't believe he played that many times for Spurs during this period. But there you go.
How many games did Alan Hutton play for Spurs?
He got injured, didn't he? 40 games during this period. 40 games, not bad.
He had some very good games for Spurs, and then he got injured and he sort of never recovered.
I thought he was very good, but yeah, that's about right. Okay, so Dan just needs strikers. Back to Tom, who's got a centre-back and a right-back to go.
If someone selects a player who literally has never played during the era we were talking, I mean, is that what we're saying with Chimbonda?
Yeah. He's disqualified. He's disqualified. Dan is disqualified.
Does that not mean Dan's team is essentially a 10-man team? He should play with 10 men, shouldn't he, really, from the start, in my opinion? Because he hasn't actually got an appearance. So
I'm going to recheck this, because that seems mad that he got signed and he didn't play at all. But that's what I've got down here.
Well, he did play. I mean, he just didn't play in this era. And Chimbonda was a good player for Spurs at one point, but before this time. Well, I should look up that, Tom.
He re-signed in the period just before we've started. So in the season that they won the League Cup, I think, it made his three appearances on his return were then and not in this period.
Right, this is a mistake from you, Tom. He shouldn't be on this list.
At the club.
No, he joined Blackburn in summer 2009, which is when we started. Yeah,
but what time in the summer? Was it like on deadline day where he could have played the first few games in the season?
No, it was 27th of August, so it wasn't deadline day. So I think this is your mistake, unfortunately.
No, but 27th of August, there would have been a couple of weeks of the season that he would have been in the squad.
Yeah,
that's your squad. Yeah,
come on, he doesn't play. So you've got a player who doesn't play.
He could have been selected for a couple of games that season. Surely
we're doing this as in like when the squad list was confirmed after deadline day, not players that like were there.
Really? So say he had played in those first two games, but then had moved on the 27th of August, he wouldn't have counted by your
logic? I'm not going to get any support here because they want me to have him, but come on.
Shambles.
I was giving you a chance to take him out. I'm just saying I'm not going to be blamed for how this works. I mean,
Tom, just remember as well, when it comes to deciding which team is the best, that Dan not only picked the worst players, but he also undermined the competition.
The thing is, the hours
you've put in, Tom, to make this happen, and Dan is now saying that it is.
And may I say how brilliant your efforts have been, Tom, as you come to choose the 11. I think you're magnificent in every way.
Fantastic, yeah.
You know,
so moving on,
this works in my favour because that season he made 30 appearances for Blackburn in the Premier League. Mm. So I'm getting a solid Premier League left back. I'm getting a good player. If I'm allowed to have him, then I want him. So
whatever you need to tell yourself, Tom. But yeah, fine. Okay, all right, cool.
Right. In my defence, I will be bringing. Is Yunus Kabul being selected yet?
No. Nope.
He was about to be.
Okay, I will have Yunus Kabul alongside Galas. Decent defender, Kabul. Wasn't, you know, probably not among Tottenham's kind of, you know, best two or three. I accept that. But he was a strong, physical, fast player, scored some very important goals. And I think alongside Galas, that's actually a pretty decent centre-half pairing.
I think he scored one important goal, Tom, to be honest, which was the winner at Arsenal. I can't remember. No, he did hit a couple of other decent ones. But he was very, very up and down. You couldn't always rely on what contribution you were going to get from Kabul, whereas you could from the man I'm favouring, and that is Vlad the Impaler Kirakesh, who wasn't there for too long, but I seem to remember he was quite good. Bearing in mind there's no one else left on this list, tell me the stats about the Impaler, Tom.
Well, he was probably the most infamous of, not infamous, but the player people pick most out of the not so magnificent seven is the biggest flop, I suppose. You might call. Wouldn't you say? I'm trying to remember the rest of them. He signed for about $8 million, which back then wasn't nothing. 17 league appearances, scored a goal, 24 in overall appearances, and then left. I can't even remember where he went to because I did this right at the last minute, that last one. So, I don't know. I mean, compared to what else is out there, I'm not sure it's a terrible choice. But
yeah, because the only alternatives, really, I was thinking about Bessong, who did score a couple of goals as well, but was a little bit, I think, vulnerable from a defensive point of view. We've mentioned Stephen Caulker, who obviously did score for England, but again, I put Kirakesh ahead of him. Milos Veljkovic is a name, again, I remember, but I can't remember what sort of contribution he provided. So I think in the circumstances, I'm going to stick with Kirakesh. And to complete my 11 in goal, bearing in mind that the full list was Gomez. Was it Ben Olmwick? Did we call it Olmwick or Anik?
Anik.
It was Anik, wasn't it? And it was David Button. Friedel's gone. Stipe Pletikosa has not gone and is not going to go. Lloris, of course, then Jordan Archer, Jimmy Walker. Carlo Cudicini was a fantastic number two, but you know, when he came in as a number one, I think when you're a number two for so long, you never quite adapt. For me, I'm delighted that Gomez is left, because when he was at his best, he was a magnificent goalkeeper. There was one season where I think he was the best keeper in the Premier League. He did have a couple of unfortunate errors, but with my managerial skills, I would just get him back to the levels that we saw. And if you ever have a penalty shootout, he's the man you want. He denied Spurs once in Europe. So I think Gomez is right up there alongside Friedel and a young Hugo Lloris.
Yeah, it's got to be Gomez there. I think looking at Kirakesh, I think that's a bit harsh on Seb Bassong. But there isn't a lot out there after that. Tom, right back, and you need a manager still.
Yeah, it's a good point actually about Seb Bassong. I was actually interested there in bringing in Alan Hutton, but I actually wonder, the flexibility of my defence is such that I could bring in Bassong, if this is all right with you, Tom, and then just switch seamlessly Gallas out to right back, which is actually where he did a lot of his best work for Spurs. So I think I will do that. I'll have Gallas as a sort of flying wing back. And I'll have Kabul and Bassong as my centre-half pairing, which I think means I've got a decent left-footer there as well. Completes a pretty good back four. It's interesting on Kirakez, just to go back. I mean, maybe we should just quickly, because we're going on a bit, but address the kind of seven signings, because that was in this era, wasn't it? It was 2013. And Kirakez, I think, was probably the worst of them, but equally he didn't really feel like that kind of high stakes, because he was sort of brought in as a slightly utility defender for what, 8 million, so it wasn't particularly expensive. I mean, I think probably Eriksen was the only one who actually succeeded, wasn't he, in the end, really? And he came good eventually. Lamella, I think you could probably say, wasn't a disastrous failure, maybe six or seven out of 10. I agree with what Dan said. It was kind of in relation to what was expected initially. He was definitely didn't live up to those expectations. Soldado was obviously a huge disappointment. You know, came in as a striker who everyone thought was going to score loads and loads of goals. Didn't work out for him. Nasser Chadli actually wasn't too bad. Kind of utility player. Again, wasn't too expensive. And who's the other one who I'm missing? But I mean, you know, obviously, I mean, I think Eriksen was essentially the only one who delivered in any kind of form. And obviously, the big thing here was not only the kind of individuals, but it was the sort of the collective disappointment of spending all that bail money and frittering it away. And Spurs took quite a lot of time to recover from that, I think, you know, and equally probably Daniel Levy did as well. I think for a while they were slightly cautious in the transfer market as a result.
Seb Bassong, I remember when Newcastle went down the first time under Shearer, he was one of the most disappointing sales, because he'd come in for hardly anything and actually been really, really good. And then obviously, you know, that's what happens when you get relegated, not the Tottenham know what that's like. You know, the fire sale begins. But he didn't really seem to kick on at Tottenham. He was solid, but when he moved to Norwich a few years later, I don't think there were too many complaints from Spurs fan. Right, so Tom's finished his team, still needs a manager. Now to Dan to pick his strikers and complete his team.
Yeah, so I've had the whole game more or less to mull over my strike force, and it hasn't got any easier, I've got to say. I have to pick Pavlyuchenko. I'm not desperate to do it. In fact, I won't say that because that's not the best message to the big Russian. But I'm going to have him. I mean, I think from memory, in at least one of these seasons, he was pretty good. I'd say 10, 11, he scored a few goals. I certainly remember him getting maybe double figures in the Premier League. So he was a decent goal scorer. He played a part in some of Spurs' best Champions League nights under Redknapp. You know, he was very reliable at getting on the end of Bale's crosses for a time. I always say he's the kind of best bad player or worst good player. You know, he had a rocket on him. So he had some kind of merit to him. And I'm going to partner him with Harry Kane. On the all-nut logic that people looking at these teams won't really understand the rules and will think, of course, that's the greatest player up front. But also, you know what? Even at the end of the 13-14 season under Sherwood, Kane was starting to show some real promise. And he got his first Premier League goal in that time. Sherwood gave him his first start. I think we know this because Sherwood has not stopped banging on about it since. But he was coming up, and it was no surprise really that the next season under Pochettino, you know, he started so well and became completely unignorable with his goals in the Europa League. You know, this was not a Kane who was kind of 17, 18 and very, very raw. It was a Kane who was on the cusp of his massive, phenomenal Premier League changing breakthrough. So I think there's still merit to having him. And I think with the service from Van der Vaart and Modric playing alongside the slightly lazy but effective Pavlyuchenko, I think he would get some goals.
Can you imagine if Spurs had actually sold into Newcastle for £1 million, as Sherwood says was a possibility back then?
I really could
have been very, very different. Yeah, I seem to remember him saying that a few times that Spurs were open to selling him for that because he barely played. Do you know what? I think it's actually the right call. There's actually only one striker left available who actually made more appearances than Kane in this period, and that was Soldado. And I don't think you'll be not picking him for obvious reasons. So I think he justifies his inclusion, but it's still pretty weak strike force from a stats point of view. But you will probably get people on Twitter going, oh, amazing.
Luis Sahar was available.
Yeah, but he didn't play very much.
I considered Sahar and Johnson, but they both only played half a season on loan.
Sahar only played 12 games for Spurs, four goals.
Good Johnson I quite liked. When in the season Spurs came fourth, I seem to remember him popping up with quite a big goal against Stoke. He did actually come in and play some important cameos and looked like he still had something, but I don't think...
Only 14 games again for Good Johnson. 14 games, there you go. And at that point, was he playing up front the whole time? I know he's down as a striker here, but, you know...
Tom, just remind me how many games Kane played in this period?
In total, 26 and five goals.
Okay.
11 in the league and three goals. Tom, it's back to you for pick your manager.
Do you think Soldado has got a shout for sort of being the most disappointing Tottenham signing of all time? Is that fair?
I think there's...
Ndombele?
There's plenty more there, Tom, I think.
Yeah. I mean, Ndombele, yeah, I agree. But I mean, equally, I think the expectation on him was slightly less. I mean, I know inflation kind of meant the price was a lot more. But in modern money, I think Soldado probably about 60, 70 million, wouldn't he? And he really delivered so little in those two seasons. What was it, five or six goals or something? Seven goals, maybe?
He was in this period, it's only just the one season. 36 games, 11 goals. It's not terrible. I mean, statistically, when you look at...
So many of them were in Europe. I mean, league goals can't have been more than
No, this is just in that season. Six league goals in that season. So, I mean, it's not... It's not great. Again, you look... Yeah, but then you... Again, looking at these numbers, Defoe is by far and away the most prolific striker with 45 goals, league goals, and 129 games.
Who's got Defoe in their team?
my team. It is your team, yes, Tom. So who's going to be managing your team?
You don't even know who's in your own team.
My manager's going to be ABB, I think, has to be. much maligned ABB, you know, as a genius who was misunderstood. I think he was actually obviously not a great manager for Spurs, but he did get them into fourth in that first season. It all unraveled in the second. It was pretty dreary football, it has to be said. He was fine, ABB, but he wasn't as good as Redknapp, but he was a lot better than Sherwood.
No. I mean, that's totally wrong. I think if you went down Tottenham High Road and you asked 100 fans whether they'd have AVB or Sherwood, I reckon 80% would say Sherwood. I mean, AVB was a disaster, I'm afraid. He had Chelsea links. He relied solely on the heroics of one player. Sherwood came in. He had a fantastic gilet. I've still got one of them. He was bouncy. He, you know, had a bit of Tottenham about him. He gave Harry Kane his first start, as we've already heard. We did all right under Sherwood. And then he did enough to get himself a move to Aston Villa and actually got them to an FA Cup final. So although he can rub people up the wrong way, and as a pundit, he's sort of very outspoken, of course, I think he actually did a better job during his brief time at Spurs than many give him credit for. I would certainly have him ahead of AVB.
Who do you think had a better win percentage, Tim Sherwood or Harry Redknapp?
Tim Sherwood, probably.
marginally. He obviously had way fewer games. But who do you think had a better win percentage, Andre Villas-Boas or Mauricio Pochettino?
It's got to be Poch.
It's not. I mean, by the very nature of my question and my tone of voice, you know, I can tell the surprise. So, Postecoglou is apparently top at the moment, albeit only 13 games, 61%. Then Frank Bretel, Arthur Turner, then AVB is fourth on the list of all time, 55%, 44 wins in 80 games. But then, you know, Ten Hag's is very actually very good, isn't it, at Man United? So these are just stats.
I think it's worth saying, obviously with win percentage is always a bit of a... Because, I mean, Sherwood was there for such a short period of time. Eventually, the defeat's kind of obviously just an empty. And also, AVB kind of took over a very good team and he kind of was sacked before the team continued to be rubbish. He went in December, didn't he, of that 2013 year, I think it was. Whereas Pochettino, of course, kind of took over a team that needed building and he had to, you know... And then there was obviously the kind of downturn at the end. So, you know, not to denigrate your stats, Tom, but...
I think it's totally fair enough. I just thought it's so interesting. I guess, you know, when you think of Poch, he was managing the Champions League as well. It's, you know, a higher level, more likely to lose games compared to the Europa League. But anyway, so that completes Tom Allnut's team. We've got Dan's whole team. It's just on Marcus to pick the one and remaining manager.
Oh, yeah. Well, so I've got to go with Sherwood. I've got to go with Sherwood. And, you know, what an amazing... I think it's very important to look at those win percentages, quite frankly. I think that decides everything. He had a better one than the others. So I've ticked that particular box and I look forward to receiving the main prize in just a moment, Tom B.
Well, Marcus, do you want to run through your team?
Yes. So my winning team today, managed by the brilliant gilet-wearing Tim Sherwood, is Aurelio Gomez in goal. He was... for one season in particular during this period, the best goalkeeper in the Premier League, magnificent shot stopper and just a really nice guy as well. An incredible defence of Kyle Walker at right back, Danny Rose at left back, Michael Dawson in the heart of the defence with the very underestimated Vlad the Impaler Kirakesh. We'll move on quickly from that. Midfield, Aaron Lennon flying here, there and everywhere, terrorising opposition defences, played, you know, the second most number of games for the club during this period, with Christian Eriksen alongside him, Gylfi Sigurdsson and Clint Dempsey, who can do all sorts of jobs. And up front, that brilliant little and large double act of Robbie Keane and Emmanuel Adebayor.
Excellent. Tom?
Hi, Tom. My team is led by Andre Villas-Boas, Brad Friedel in goal. William Gallas, right back, centre-halves, Kabul and Bassong, left back, Benoit Okoto, midfield, right wing, Cranchar, Parker and Palacios in central midfield with Bale on the left, and Peter Crouch and Jermaine Defoe up front, which I think gives me the highest goal scorer in this era, by far the best player in this era, the best goalkeeper in this era, and the best strike partnership in this era. All in, I mean, I know, all in one team in a rotation game. It's strange how it managed to fit all this in, but I think that's the end result.
Anybody?
Well, propaganda aside, I've got Harry Redknapp, plainly the best manager of this era. Hugo Lloris in goal, plainly the best goalkeeper in Spurs history and certainly of this time period. Certainly that's a pick than granddad Brad Friedel cemented to his line. Capable of using his feet.
His best game, of course, was when he was concussed at Everton.
Look forward to having Brad on the pod soon after that game.
Yeah, we love you, Brad. Vedran Čurluka at right back, certainly Spurs' most reliable right back of this era. Kyle Walker was all over the place, frankly. Ledley King and Jan Vertonghen, whose reputations speak for themselves. I've got the excellent Pascal Chimbonda at left back, who was mistakenly put on this list by Tom, but nonetheless, made 30 appearances for Blackburn that season and was excellent. So I'm sure he could have done a great job. On my right, I've got the inverted Andros Townsend, England international of the time, Andros Townsend, scorer of bangers on a weekly basis. I've got the unimpeachable Luka Modric and Sandro Ranieri as my centre midfield two. I've got Rafa van der Vaart playing the free role, just floating, creating, scoring. And up front, I've got Spurs' greatest player of all time, Harry Kane, and the deadly and exciting Roman Pavlyuchenko.
Harry aged eight, and
well, that is exactly what I wanted. I think this is a perfect period for to do this because there are some really great players, but there are a lot more sort of players who either weren't quite either past it or not quite at the level that we think of them at, or just, let's be honest, bang average. And all the teams have a mixture of that. I think we should try and open this one up to the listeners, hopefully, and get a bit of Twitter interaction. But do you want me to give my take on these
yes.
teams?
Yes.
Okay. So start off with Marcus's team. I think Adebayor is a really good pick. I do think Kirakesh in the heart of defence lets it down. And it is unbelievably attacking in midfield. But actually, Michael Dawson, it's not bad. We'll come back to that. Tom, obviously Bale, best player available, fantastic. But then, do you know what? The defence on paper doesn't read that impressively. But during this period of being a bit better than you might think, Palacios and Parker's a bit slightly defensive for my liking there. And then obviously Dan's got Redknapp, which is a big sort of feather in your cap. Vertonghen, like Lloris, obviously, but then it all kind of goes to pieces, mainly at left back. Sandro's having to work very hard in that midfield, albeit with Modric. And then, yeah, as mentioned, Kane. Kane's pretty young at this time. Can I pick Tom on it again?
Yeah, thank you. 2-0.
I can't. I think I'm going to go for...
It's me.
It's Marcus Buckland.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
Famous Marcus Buckland.
It's a great team.
The four attacking midfielders and Gylfi Sigurdsson team.
I'm sure that Twitter will endorse your excellent judgment, Tom B. Thank you very much.
Just for that, picking Aaron Lennon and Gareth Bale gets some extra credit in the bank.
I'd like to thank everybody who knows me and look forward to taking charge of that team.
I understand that you want to keep the competition alive and sort of keep the jeopardy of this podcast going, but I think it's quite clear that your first pick there was my team. And what we can see very clearly is that Dan was not even in contention. When you read out Dan's team, I sort of thought, you're kind of waiting for the premium picks to come. You're like, okay, well, these must be the compromise picks. There's going to be a great player somewhere. But they just don't arrive. Like, they never come. And you get to the end. And what is it up front? Pavlyuchenko and Academy and Harry Kane. I don't know where the good picks were.
What, so you don't think Lloris, King, Vertonghen, and Modric, Sander and Van der Vaart were great players for Tottenham? I reckon the listeners will side with me.
I quite like having Dan be excited for the next one. He's going to be come back strong.
Well, I'll be picking first next time.
I'm telling you, the middle is not the place you want to be. You've got to be there all the time. You don't get the double picks. It's a tough to grind out a victory in the middle position.
It shows, mate. It shows. But listen, Tom B, brilliant work as always to get that list, including players that didn't play during that period. It was fantastic, and all the stats and everything else. And hopefully, do you yet know what our next period would be, assuming we get fantastic response to this one? Where can we go to next?
I don't know. I mean, the obvious thing is to carry on the next load of years, but then it's mainly Poch and there aren't actually that many players. So I don't think that'll work too well. We go back too far. I don't know how knowledgeable you guys will be for the 90s. Maybe early 2000s, maybe sort of... For Dan and Tom, kind of university time. Marcus, prime of your career.
Thank you very much.
When do you fancy that kind of period?
I'd like to find the prime of my career at some stage, or I do think maybe we could put this out to everybody. But greatest ever Spurs team as well. That, you know, we could just have everybody. I think that would be quite fun.
Yeah. See what you think. See what the listeners think.
Okay. Well done, mate. That was fantastic. Tom Barkley, the creative genius behind our second draft pod. And we'll get your reaction. Let us know. Obviously, you're going to confirm Tom's vote for me having the best team. But Tom A of the Times, good luck next time around. And Dan Kilpatrick, I mean, well, listen, go and do a bit more research is all I can say. I'm Marcus Buckland. I'm the champion. I'm the winner. And this is the Tottenham Way podcast. See you next time.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18+. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.